NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor.
Thanks, Hunter.
We got quite an episode today. We can get started off with a little Patreon question of the week. Talk through a bunch of storylines from the U.S. Women's Disc Golf Championships. There's, I got like 15.
This guy's got pictures on his notes.
I got like 15 different.
He does that for me so I can read better.
No, I got like 15 different screenshots of social media posts and different things to cover this week. So buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy episode. But let's start it off with a little word from our sponsors.
Click it or ticket.
Football season is back. And you know what that means. Touchdown dances, Sunday tailgates, and epic fantasy showdowns with fellas. Let's not forget the real MVP of the season.
It's not.
Introducing the all-new Beard Hedger Pro Kit from Manscaped. Your ultimate luxury beard grooming experience. This kit is your secret weapon for staying sharp on and off the field. So don't fumble this opportunity. Head over to manscaped.com and elevate your grooming game with the Beard Hedger Pro Kit. Join the 9 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. You heard that right. 9 million men. Or 109 MetLife stadiums full. So go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with the code GRIPLOCK. That's one word, GRIPLOCK. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit is grooming powerhouse built for precision and style, just like your favorite quarterback. This kit tackles beard touch-ups effortlessly, ensuring you're always prepped for the next play. Plus, it has a compact design for easy portability. This cordless trimmer has a rotary reel that gives you 20 hair-cutting links with one guard. So no more messy drawers full of extra add-ons. That's right. Face grooming doesn't have to be hard. Get 20 beard links in just one guard. Plus, it's waterproof, so you can shave in the shower to avoid all that hair in the sink. And the titanium-coated T-blade is tough on hair but smooth on your face, leading to a single-stroke efficiency that brings satisfaction one stroke at a time. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using code GRIPLOCKED. Your grass is not artificial. Keep it shaved with Manscaped.
I love it whenever we have an ad read of something that I literally used like this weekend. Like I literally used mine yesterday.
What? You don't even have facial hair.
Yeah.
Connor's been clean shaven for weeks, so our audio listeners.
I don't have facial hair because I used it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You just generated like 50 extra clicks on our YouTube video.
Yeah, our audio listeners are like, what? I can kind of see beardless
I cannot
Connor.
Confirm nor deny, but I'm going to scratch my face and you tell me if it sounds like beard or not.
That's awful. Yeah. I'll scratch my face. Can you tell me if it sounds like beard or not?
Another tough listen.
I can't even hear it.
Back-to-back tough listens.
All right. We're going to kick it off with our Patreon question of the week. If you're wondering where this question comes from, it is over on our patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. We got a thing over there called the Heiser Club Mailbag, where it's a weekly Q&A session with us. And most of the questions aren't disc golf related, but some of them are. Like this one from Brock Mickley. He said, with the news of W.R. Jackson and the IDGC having to remove effectively all the trees that made the course what it is because of the beetle infestation, do you think Champion Cup should be hosted there after the design of a new course or move it somewhere else? Could be a good opportunity to move it elsewhere as the event is still only a couple of years old.
Yeah. I think that I don't know that the event needs moved in entirety. It's really sad that the course is getting taken down. Dang, you're really taking a lean back. Okay, fair enough. It's really sad what's happening to it, but my biggest thing is that they are moving it to the end of the season, which I think everybody agrees is a bad idea. They're just backloading the end of the season. All the important events are happening then. It's not good. So I think what needs to happen is they need to move it just next year, and then if they want to move it back to whatever course they are able to recreate at that property, then that's fine. But trying to force the issue is not good.
Yeah, no, I don't mind it staying on this property long term, especially if they can recreate W.R. Jackson in a form. Like, if it still has the same essence, the property has a lot of history. That course obviously had a lot of history. I believe it's officially shut down Wednesday.
So what do they have to do to get rid of the beetles?
Cut trees.
They basically had to log it. Because all the trees are dead or dying. So now it's a safety hazard because they're all just going to fall over.
You hit one with your D1, I feel like
this just opens up a scary option for people who don't like certain courses.
Well,
are you condoning that?
Yeah, what are you mentioning here?
I said scary.
Anyways.
Therefore, I cannot be
legally held. At a Greenfield.
Yeah, it happened at Greenfield locally. Ash beetles. Took out all the ash trees.
That is
there
so
a beetle
crazy.
For every variety of tree? Is there pine?
This I think
is
pine
this
is
beetles.
Pine beetles.
Is there maple beetles?
Oak beetles.
Oak beetles?
That's crazy.
Maybe.
Christmas beetles?
Back to what I was saying. I don't mind the idea. Like if they can keep the essence of W.R. Jackson there, I don't mind it coming back. But it can't be. And I don't. I know knowing the PDGA, it won't be the end of next year. I think this is
really?
A classic situation where they announce. I mean, they've done this how many times? Where they announce something. The backlash from public and players that they should have talked to beforehand comes out, and they're like, oh, you didn't like this? Well,
that
look, we're the good
true.
Guy. We're going to listen and move it. And it's like, no, you're not the good guy. If they were the good guy, you would have talked to the players
not
before.
Not really
you
a good idea.
Guy.
Yeah.
Not really a good way to do that.
Because what I think they should do is just figure out. Actually, was it Dustin that had this idea on debate night? He said basically they should just flip. They should, like, next year do Champions Cup at Nevin, where the Tour Championship mm-hmm. is, and just do that in April and then have the Tour Championships at the new W.R. Jackson, because timeline, that fits.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense for 1 year, and then you just flip it back the next year. But no, I think if you want to keep it a Southeastern, you know, disc golf, find a course somewhere in Georgia or in South Carolina or North Carolina that just fits the vibe for 1 year, and you just go to it in April once for 1 year, and then next year you bring it back to where it should be. Because the spacing of April, June, August, October makes perfect sense for the four majors.
Yeah.
To go June, August, October, October, and in between the August and the two October, you also have MVP Open, GMC, you're close to like Ledgestone, D-Glow, and then you got the Tour Championship too. Like, the season's not going to matter next year if they do this until August.
Kind of a hot seat moment for Woods Disc Golf, huh? Beatles yeah. takes down the whole thing.
We should start making trees out of plastic.
We should just start playing on all golf courses that solve the issue.
As much as you want to disagree with Trevor, he does have a point there.
He does have a point.
That is
a
like,
stupid point.
It's just a crazy like thing to think about that like was this even preventable? Like, how did this happen? And then like just some Beatles, man. And then like all it took, like, I want to know where this started to know the butterfly effect. Like, oh, the butterfly effect, or the beetle effect, if you will, of just one beetle wandering or being brought onto this property is that this disc golf major won't happen anymore at this course.
It's crazy.
Because like they murdered all the trees.
Yeah.
Well, didn't they a few years ago they logged the property? Remember that, and it led to the redesign.
I obviously were hole four because
like the Turkey Gulch. Remember the Turkey Gulch back in the day? That's
yeah,
gone.
But some of those hole locations still exist. That was, I think the Turkey Gulch was a lot to make the course more difficult because the part they logged, I don't know that intersects.
Yeah, it did. Because okay. that was the year they fully redesigned when you go over that, there's like four holes in a new section because they all got logged and then they redesigned it over there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, for
because at the end of the day, the IDGC doesn't own that property.
No,
in Wildwood Park.
And this, yeah, and this is like.
So, do they just log the trees with the beetles in it, or they log like everything?
Well, back then, this wasn't a beetle issue. It was just like a.
Like, what do they do now? Though?
They will
every now.
Tree that
I
is
don't
dead,
know. I would imagine every tree is
probably
dead,
they
but,
probably have to kind of make up a perimeter, basically.
Interesting.
And then and go from there. I mean, yeah, and this kind of comes back down to like. Deciding to start a major on and decide that this is the only course it's at and you don't own the property, I think is a little bit...
I mean, that doesn't matter for Beatles, but...
Right, but I think even without that, it's still... This is the danger of doing the one property thing because now you're already trying to force the issue just to keep it on that property. It's the same issue that USDGC is going to run into. Whenever they have to leave Winthrop University. And so I almost feel like disc golf, unless you really know a property is a guaranteed thing, and like this park, this isn't really a fair example per se, but I just don't even know if it's smart for the sport because like European Open, that course might get shut down.
That course is getting shut
exactly.
down.
Exactly. So like that's what I'm saying is I think it might be smarter for disc golf to just rotate and like keep it a tight rotation, but like let's say USDGC is played on three different courses and it just goes 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and then one of them gets taken out for some reason, it's a lot easier to slide in a new one. It's almost kind of fun to get it into the rotation rather than just sitting on the same property. This is the danger of doing that. Now, the benefit of having one course is it takes a lot less time to like create a historical environment, because like golf, for example, has been around forever. And so like when the US Open goes back to Pebble Beach, everybody's like, oh, remember the like these other times it was at Pebble Beach and we know this and that. And it's like, or the British Open goes to St. Andrews, same thing. So even if the sport's around long enough, you can have a rotation that still works out that way, but it definitely takes longer. But I just don't know if disc golf should be banking on singular properties at this point. It just creates a bigger issue when something doesn't work out. It's a risky play.
To a certain extent, I think that I hate rotating majors, personally. But like USDGC...
I mean, all of them in golf do, except for the Masters.
That's fine. We're not golf. That's why we hand out t-shirts for Frisbee trophies, man. But no, I don't like rotating majors from the history aspect, because we don't have the history yet. Well, and it's really easy.
That's a very here and now. The other problem too is you gotta build for the future.
The other problem too is though, we don't rotate within a rotation. We rotate like Worlds has been at 55 different places, and that's the only rotating major we have right now. And there's no like US Open, you know, when US Open comes, that has a theme. It's always like the toughest pin, the event still has a theme.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
disc golf doesn't do that.
I think Champions Cup, for example, they would rotate like 3 to 4 courses that are like a more wooded course. USDGC would rotate courses with more OB. European Open, it's in Europe. Like that's just kind of part of the theme.
I think if we stuck with something like that,
I'd be okay with it,
but that's just not what disc golf does. Yeah. The rotating major of Worlds goes...
Well, the Worlds is a mess for an entire...
All over the place.
Worlds is a mess.
And so that's what I don't like is like when disc golf has done a rotating major, they've done it to where Worlds can one year feel like the most important, incredible thing when you're on the property, and then the next year be like... I mean, there's a few flags.
They've just never tried. That's the thing. It's like Worlds, they've never even made an effort to do that.
Versus the majors that stay in one spot, USDGC and European Open are the only ones we have history with. They're the most prestigious felt majors because of that.
Both of them are about to get upended.
We don't know USDGC yet.
Well, we do know in the next, I would give it more than five years.
You're guessing.
I've heard.
but you don't know.
Okay. Okay, it is a good certainty that it will not be at a college university for very much longer.
There's a solid chance, yes.
Yeah, so
but we don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Okay,
it's leaving. But we do know European Open is leaving.
Right. So that's what I'm saying is those majors get upended. So I think it's a safer to go with Now I don't think I think that it's fine to have.
And plus, W.R. Jackson, they could redesign on this property and it could be a better course when we come back.
Yeah, but
but I think the problem with it that. Is it's just that we don't own the property.
Yeah.
Because like you could safely put one at Maple Hill and nothing's wrong with that. It's going to stay there all the time.
Listen, the one course major I think is awesome. And like I said, I would almost prefer it as well. It's just the idea that you're trying to future proof things. And if you don't own the property or if you don't feel that the property is under ownership, that things aren't like Augusta National, it's a golf course, right? Like it's not a park. It'd be one thing if this was at a disc golf course that we knew was in good shape and was like going to stay around and there was no reason to believe that there'd ever be a problem with it. But right now, like you said, Maple Hill might be one of the better examples of that. Maybe do we just move one of the majors to Maple Hill?
My opinion, no. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think it's a good enough major course. Okay, I think it's not future proofed because I don't think it has the distance. I think that's the problem with that property. But
scored really tough though.
It did score tough. We're not there yet. But I'm just saying I don't think it has the distance to be future proofed.
Fair enough.
I think eventually the sport will outgrow that property. But that can be true of most properties because like eventually golf could outgrow Augusta, but golf you can just make a few changes and it doesn't matter how short a course is. Disc golf's not like that.
They make the basket smaller, man.
Yes, you can make the basket smaller, but yeah. Anyways, enough talk about that. W.R. Jackson to recap, Champions Cup should be in April again next year, and then they should go back to W.R. Jackson the year after. and not try to shove another major into the end of the season next year. Bad idea.
Yeah, I'll be shocked if that actually stays there. That would be crazy. If that thing...
No, there's been enough public backlash that this is a... I feel like that's a classic PDGA move. Now, yeah. USWDGC just went down, US Women's Major. We have Kristen Tatar taking it down, making her the first FBO player ever to complete the official Grand Slam, win all four majors in one season. Owen Scoggins came in second. Hannah Blomers came in third. I mean, look, Kristen showed up and she did what she had to do. It got close at times. She always started the round rough.
Kept it interesting for us.
She really struggled with those first few holes. I think they said that she was averaging like two over or something through the first four.
Yeah.
Whereas some other players were going like three under. So what seemed to happen is like she would start. I mean, after day one, she was on like the third or fourth card. But it was like she would start the round rough. It would look really bad. And then she'd kind of pull herself back together.
She was never out of condition. Yeah, what was the furthest she was out of it?
I can look. Round one was when she was farthest out. And she was on like third card, but I think she was on like two strokes or something. Yeah,
it never got to a point where she was always hanging around.
Because it was like Henna, Haley, Missy were all at six. And then you had Val, Holly, Silva at four. And then Kristen was at three. But she was in a huge tie at three under.
Yeah.
So she was three strokes out, but that's what put her bumped her way down.
When Haley came out of the gates kind of hot and Kristen was, you know, somewhat slower, I thought that maybe Haley was going to have another really good weekend.
Yeah, and Haley didn't have a bad weekend. She ended up tied for fourth. The final round, though, the real storyline was Kristen. Obviously, she came out flat again. Henna came out even through five. Kristen was two over through five. And then Henna kind of hung with her through hole eight to where they were, I would say, back and forth, but they were both, I think, tied for the lead. So it was looking very exciting. Meanwhile, at that point, you had Evelina Solin in a few holes ahead, and she was like five under through the front nine. I think she ended up getting six under through 10. So she was charging. She was like a few strokes back. And then you had Owen Scoggins from hole six to hole 12, birdieing all of them. So she started pushing. Hole nine was when things really flipped, though. That was the hole where Kristen birdied Henna's bogey, and that was the first of what would end up being a few missed very close putts for Henna, which was the same old story that we've seen
there a little bit.
And then once Kristen took that punch, she rolled with it and went birdied 9, 10, 11, 12, and then birdied 15 and 17 to finish it out. So she ended up shooting 5 under after starting 2 over through 5. Owen Scoggins, I believe, had the hot round for the day, possibly even the tournament, at 8 under par, bringing her into second place. So she ended up, after hole 9, stepping into the contender role more so, but she ended up bogeying on 13, and that didn't put her out of it because the final stretch is tough. But what really, I think, sealed the deal was she took a bogey to Kristen's par on 16.
Yeah.
And from then on, it was like, okay, she's going to have to make up, I think it was 4 strokes with 2 to play. And like at that point, I mean, before it was still 3 strokes with 3 to play, and that wasn't undoable, but it felt like probably not going to happen. 4 strokes, 2 to play, definitely wasn't going to happen. And then it was 4 strokes, 1 to play. And like then it was sealed the deal. But Kristen showed up, did what she had to do. And now, like we had said leading into the week at the preview show, she officially has something that she is the only player to have ever done, which is sweeping all four majors in one season in the FPO field. Paul McBeth did it in 2015 in the MPO field. But that is a check in her GOAT argument box, because before all of her accolades, there was people that had more major wins, more X, Y, or Z than her, had dominant stretches. This is something that she has on everyone else.
Yeah.
To some of the players, you do have to, I believe, I forget which player it is. It was either Juliana Corver or Des Redding that swept the majors in the season. But back then, I think there's only two majors.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to factor that in a little bit when you're talking GOAT status, is like she won all four, but other players might have done it if there was four. And that's what Paul McBeth tweeted. I believe this is his first tweet since June. But, you know, when something happens in disc golf that gets Paul fired up, he'll head to Twitter. So he said, "I'm currently watching hashtag USWDGC, and they are sharing stats, and they say, in parentheses, modern era. What year did the modern era stats start? I feel like they're just picking a year to create storylines." Then he responded back to it 30 minutes later and said, "To add to my original tweet, they just posted that Kristen is the first FPO player to win all majors in a single season. That's not true at all. She's the first to win four majors in a year and the first official Grand Slam. Saying the first to win all majors is a lie."
Wish he would have like included the other player. I know it has been done. I think it was Juliana.
I think it was Juliana Corver.
I will say that.
But it was very misleading, because like DGN, StatMando was being very clear when they tweeted, but DGN, every time they said first player to win all majors in a season.
DGN, I think sometimes like DGN likes to act like disc golf didn't exist before. Well, this isn't necessarily completely true, but some stats, and they kind of like treat disc golf as in it was born in like 2018. and I think the modern era thing is funny, like Paul was saying, and I wonder what they were considering for the beginning of that, for like their stats. Like what would you consider the modern era of disc golf?
I would say it would start with 2016, because I would say the beginning of the Pro Tour, which I believe was the 2016 season. That I would imagine that's what they're calling the modern era, because prior to that, the tour didn't exist. There was the National Tour, but the Disc Golf Pro Tour didn't exist. So I'd imagine from a Disc Golf Pro Tour broadcast point of view, they can say modern era and then say, like, basically use our stats from here on.
They probably should have just said Pro Tour era if that was the case.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I
would, like, personally, what I would consider the modern era is probably like 2010 on, somewhere in there. Like, whenever you started having destroyers.
I was like, no, not her. So like before that, 06. Yeah.
Sure, 06 on. It's funny, like, call modern
Paul,
era.
To Paul's tweet, like, he said, I feel like they're just trying to, like, pick a year to create storylines. Well, yeah, like, that is what statisticians do.
Absolutely.
If you follow a stats account, like, they are looking, a lot of times they will find what might be a stat, and then they'll be like, okay, but where do we need to start and end our timeline to make this the most interesting? And that's just kind of what they do. There's nothing, they're not incorrect stats as long as they're giving you the right data, but they definitely do.
Well, saying that was the problem was, because I don't have a problem with the modern era, because I don't even think you have
the other
to
one, though, is flat out false.
The saying first to win all, well,
if that's how they worded it,
that is how Terry Miller worded it that way multiple times. Yeah. First to win all majors in a single season. And I think you could use literature to find a way for that not to be false, because, like,
the first player to win all majors in a season is not true, though.
But no, because there was two. But I'm saying, like, I'm sure there's some loophole somewhere, because, like, well, no, they didn't win these two, and these are majors, so she didn't win all majors. You know what I'm saying? But it's an incorrect statement at face value. Yeah. It's 100% incorrect. But the first time I heard it and saw it, that's how I repeated it, was, oh, Kristen's going to be the first to ever do this. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, no, because we're just discrediting players that have done it in the past with only two. So still, Kristen's the first to win all four majors, which is funny because that's not less impressive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like saying first to win all four or official Grand Slam.
They used to have eight.
Yeah, like they used to have only two, so she won two more. And, like, you can't say that the other players would have won the next two, because they didn't, because they didn't exist.
You can't say that they didn't, though, either.
I can. They didn't win the other two.
No,
they didn't exist. They didn't do it.
They didn't have the opportunity, man. It's not fair.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, it's not. It doesn't make it less impressive stat to say Kristen's the first to win all four.
I don't think it's that big of a deal.
But
the Kristen Slam.
Well, it's a big deal for if you're Juliana Korver, because you're being erased from the history books by the way are they wording it.
She's Thanos.
True.
Too.
So it's a big deal for that. But someone commented that she did the Tiger Slam, which that's not true.
Yeah.
But she did better than the Tiger
Slam. Well, better than a Tiger Slam. Yeah. She did the Tiger Slam, but better, because
Tiger wasn't in one season.
Yeah, he held all the titles at one time.
But it was
across
season.
Two seasons.
She had already done. No, she hadn't done that, because U.S. Women's was the one she missed last
Kristen
year.
Kristen Starr is better than Tiger Woods.
That's what I was trying to get
at. That's the title of this podcast.
Disc golf is better than golf.
Yeah.
Disc golf is better than Tigers.
Nailed it.
Tiger King, episode 6.
But there's not really, there's not too much really to talk about Kristen's performance, because she just did what she's done all year.
This is a very typical Kristen performance. And the putting is something to talk about.
94% C1X for the event,
that
total.
I mean, that...
Not really much to talk about.
If Kristen's doing
two,
that, I mean, no, she didn't make any in the last
9%
round.
Circle two all tournament.
I feel like in that, in the woods, though, a lot of times circle two, you just have obstacles.
These greens are very tricky. Crowded, so there was a lot of circle two looks were layup for par.
Yeah.
And just take a mess and move on. What was really impressive that final round was there were several times that she was way out of position, early tree kick. The commentary team, rightfully so, I didn't feel like they were exaggerating this, were like, bogey's going to be a good score here. I don't know. Like, there's no good line. Brian Earhart was on the ground. He's like, I don't know what she's going to have. Like, I don't be surprised to see a pitch out to the side. And then she would put it to like 15 feet. And like, she was throwing flex shots at like, in woods golf, you can't really see what's going on. A disc just flying through trees.
Mm-hmm.
But
like,
she would throw a flex shot
stops.
And it looked like there was no gap. And next thing you know, it'd spit out and be at 15 feet.
The best
and she'd
way
make the putt
to
for
describe
par.
Watching mm-hmm. wood scrambling is like whenever you watch hockey on TV, and I love watching hockey, but like Sometimes it's tough to keep track of the puck, especially if like a defenseman hits like a slap shot from like the blue line. Like it it goes really fast and it's pretty small on TV. So a lot of times if I'm watching the playoffs and I'm like super invested in my team and I'm super nervous about the other team scoring, my eyes will just kind of go to the back of the net. I'm like not even looking to see where the puck goes. Like I'm just looking to hopefully not see a puck hit the back of the net. And when I'm watching Wood scrambling, you kind of just have to like look to see if the disc makes it out of the clearing. Like you're not going to really follow it all. You're just kind of wait to see like at what the end result is, because anything that happens on the way there, you have no idea if it's going to hit you or not.
Yeah, there were several times like that where she just was deep in the woods. It felt like, here we go. This could be a bogey at best. And then she would get out for par.
Scrambling.
And it was just crazy. Henna Blomroos also, unfortunately for her, Kristen doing what we always expect is fortunate. Henna doing what we always expect, unfortunate. She had a few pretty bad. They at least hit metal this time. I know there's been there's been historic ones where that hasn't been the case. These, like one of them was even a okay thrown putt. It just clanked off the front cage. But yeah, I mean, you could just see it all over her when she would step up. I could read her body language and be like, this is a miss. Yeah. This is a miss right here, because it was a 15 footer and you could just see the way the disc was coming out of her hand. It just like, it was timid.
It snowballs. And like all of us bad putters know that feeling of walking up to.
I did it three times in our last match.
Yeah, walking up to a 15 to 20 footer and just knowing like, I'm probably missing this. Like, we all know that feeling.
Yeah, but it was sad to see, because like, it's not.
She throws it so well too.
Because this is the what I was about to say is Henna Blomroos would have won this tournament if she could putt, and you might think that can't be true. Oh, Kristen did a lot. Well, this is the gained putting stat is probably the best way to do it. Kristen Tatar gained 13.48 strokes in the field putting. Henna Blomroos lost 1.2, and she lost by 7 strokes. So she lost almost 15 strokes on the putting green to Kristen.
Tough scene.
Mm-hmm. And then there it is.
You're not gonna win a golf tournament doing that.
No, yeah. See, Circle 1X putting, she was 65%, and she was 0% Circle 2 for the weekend.
You're gonna have. I'd like to know who on the Pro Tour this year has won with the least amount of strokes gained on the field putting. I would be shocked if anybody was in the negative. Like if anybody won while losing strokes to the field.
Surely not. I mean, Evelina Solonen was one stroke behind Henna with a worse putting performance. 57% C1X, lost 2.4 strokes in the field putting. So she had a... So Evelina and Henna, they are the players we thought they were when it comes to throwing a disc. They just can't putt.
They're just the biggest... Yeah, they're the biggest what if in FPO, because they would both be like... just looking at that...
We would have three Kristen Tatars.
Yeah, I was like, just looking at that stat, if they were good putters, I mean, they would be... Yeah, right on that level, because they do throw so well. Like they throw the disc far, they are accurate, they're incredible at throwing the disc. So they just need like gale force winds for throw pink, and so putting just gets taken out of the equation, and then they're in business.
Yeah, the final thing I wanted to bring up is post the event, the Disc Golf Pro Tour put on their story a picture of just this pen of a bunch of goats, and then big letters at Kristen Tatar. Under
making
it.
A stance.
How do we feel about the Pro Tour calling an active player a goat?
That is interesting. That is interesting, isn't it? I don't know if the NBA would be out here daring to do something like that. It's brave of them.
It wouldn't surprise me if the NBA put like King James and just like
they would.
But I don't think they would call him the goat, because like calling him King James is different.
Are they? Do you think that they're just taking some of the like? Like, they're not saying, like, she is the goat.
This is what I think.
Or they're just kind of being like, oh, goat. Like, she's goat. Like, you know.
Greatest
like,
of all time. What's that stand for?
I know, but, like, can't you say that. Maybe they're just taking the power away from it. Maybe they don't quite understand how important that phrase is.
Well, what I think is that this is just a social media manager that saw a bunch of goats and was like, oh, this is fun, and then posted it, not thinking I'm making an official statement from
that's
the
what
disc
I'm
golf
saying.
Pro Tour.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that deep. It's funny. It's a good post.
It's funny. I'm pissed off on Paige Pierce sitting at home in a boot, and I see the Pro Tour calling someone else.
Well, like
goat.
Kristen told her, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if y'all saw that post, but Paige posted and basically said that she was writing this long post, and again, you have to read into it to make something out of nothing here, but it is a weird place to put a quote.
That's what we do on this podcast. We make something out of nothing.
She just wrote, it's like this long post about how she's content being where she's at right now, prepping for her wedding and all of this, and all of her previous posts were about like how she wishes she was on the course and she needs to just take time. That was all of it, but in the midst of it, she threw in something about like Chris and Tatar told me at, like when I was leaving Norway after I broke my foot, like maybe this is a sign that you need to slow down. But like where she put it in there, it like it felt a little out of context, and with historical posts of Paige v. Kristen, it felt like a little bit of a shot, although I don't think it was intended to be. It's just when you see things through a certain lens for a while, then you read that comment with a certain lens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I knew.
Well, because
what you're
like, I mean, the whole Missy Gannon thing at Worlds created this Paige v. Kristen narrative.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and then
true.
When you put that quote into that narrative, there's only one place it fits, even though it's probably not where it belongs.
I do know what you're saying, man.
With that being said, it's time for a fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia.
Trev's Triv.
Trivia with Trevor.
Trev.
All right, I got another one of these sporical quizzes. I haven't done one of these in a while.
Hit them with it.
All right, so what I have here is a list of the MPO players with one plus major win.
Okay.
So you have to have at least one. It looks like there's a good bit, quite a few that only have one. There's definitely, I would say half the list probably only has one.
So we're just naming MPO players that have at least one major win.
At least one major.
And we just go for how long?
The time limit on this one they give you, like all of them, is not very accurate. They give you like 10 minutes.
But how long are you giving us?
I'm going to give you... We're going to do this to where I'm going to give you...
This is MPO majors. Like not an MPO player that won an MP40 major.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you only 2 minutes. 2 minutes, and you have to go...
At least one.
You have to go back and forth.
Oh, gosh. What happens if I get one wrong?
That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. You can guess wrong. Guessing wrong is fine. But you have to keep going to get
one. Can Hunter
one.
Give me hints?
No.
Go back and forth.
If you guess wrong, you have to keep going to get one.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
You want to start?
I'm sorry, Hunter.
Get the timer.
2 minutes. We can stay in the modern era. And
okay.
All right.
All right.
Ready and go.
Isaac Robinson.
Chris Dickerson.
Paul McBeth.
James Conrad.
Ricky Wysocki.
Jeremy Colling.
Greg Barsby.
Avery Jenkins.
You said it. We're getting into Nate Doss.
Eric McCabe.
Ken Climo.
Dave Feldberg.
Barry Schultz. Do I need to go again?
No.
Okay.
No, it's my turn. I just got to think who we haven't said. Gannon Burr. Just throw a name out there.
Well, Calvin famously hasn't won.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Think though, same team.
Nate Sexton.
Yeah, baby.
Okay.
Harold Duvall.
Oh, okay, that's one. Did you say Eric McCabe?
I did.
Did Schwebe win?
Not an MPO major, I don't
Dang
think.
It.
You're thinking. Ooh, okay. Can I give him hints?
Yeah.
Dang it.
You can.
Just hop into this one.
Okay, all right.
Can I give him a hint?
All right, you give me a... Oh. I don't think that helped me.
Dang it.
So I know that... So Johnny McRae didn't win anything because that was one of the things we talked about last time. But who else is there? Who's the black putter? We already said him.
Who are you just thinking of?
He's like jump putts with the black putter. That's like his outside
Feldberg.
The circle.
Oh, Feldberg. Yeah. Said him.
Did you guys name like our favorite player yet?
No, he didn't.
Paul McBeth?
No. Our favorite player.
Who's our favorite player?
He's a real prodigy.
Yeah, 5 seconds.
Oh, Will Schustrick.
Steve Brinster.
Time's up.
Yeah, we got them both.
Okay.
I was trying to get you to Brinster with the Brinster hop.
Okay, I'm making sure I didn't. I'm gonna make sure I didn't miss anything.
Okay, well, I only got really bad stuck on one. So
you guys came out the gates hot. All right, let me see.
Well, I mean, it's easy.
How many are there? Did you say?
You said Rick.
It's probably like 100 something.
No, there's not. You said Rick.
Yep.
You said Avery.
Yep.
I don't believe. Did you? You said Barsby as well.
Yes.
I missed that one. I don't believe you said Eagle.
No.
Did you say Conrad?
Yep.
Okay, you said Conrad.
We didn't say Simon either.
I don't think Simon won a major? Major.
Oh, you're right.
Did you say Nico?
No.
No. Dang.
Did you say Steve Rico?
No. What did Rico win?
Apparently he has two majors. Okay, so that, all right, I think I have your full list. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10. Good pick on Harold Duvall.
Thank you.
Yeah.
11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
I don't know if that year's right.
18.
You said it with so much confidence, though.
You got 18 out of 31. Some names that okay. you missed. Steve Rico, Nicola Castro, Sam Ferenz.
Yep, that was a 16-year-old
Eagle McMahon, one. Jesper Lundmark, he has two. Cam Todd, Greg Hosfield. A lot of the ones. Ron Russell. Johnny Cius, Corey Ellis.
Mm.
Didn't have the newest one there, or one of the newer ones. And then a couple like older guys. But you did a pretty good job.
Mm.
Missing Nico Castro.
Yeah, I would say Eagle and Nico were two of the names that are like, I should have got that.
Harold Duvall was 1982.
Dang.
Age of 19, he was the first ever world champ.
But 18 out of 31. You guys can go find this quiz on Sporacle if you search for disc golf MPO players with one plus major wins quiz. Test your friends. Obviously, you've now heard.
Comment down below which players you said during that we didn't.
Yeah. Who were the biggest misses there? That was pretty good.
So last week on the episode, we were talking about the time lapses, I believe. Simon time lapses.
Time lapse effect.
Yep.
Releases were coming up.
Butterfly
releases
effect.
Have happened. And now, so previously it was like, what is MVP doing?
I feel like I got to get on eBay for this.
We were trying to figure things out. No, I'm not even going to eBay because eBay's flippers.
I need to like double check it.
I mean, discs are flipping for crazy amounts. They're flipping for like $270+. But what I'm bringing up here is some retailers. I don't know what the frick they were thinking. They weren't thinking.
Hit them with it.
Is what I'm thinking.
Oh, hit them with it.
First off, I'm just going to name drop them.
Go ahead.
Because why not? Disc Golf Center.
Oh, Hunter, you need to do them like that.
Was dropping these. I had to check the site for myself because I didn't believe it when I saw the picture.
Oh, my gosh.
It just says time lapse on their site from, so this means the lowest it's listed for. So it's not like they only sold one for this. This was just like listed for $160.
It's crazy. Did they sell out?
I'm sure.
Check the site.
Because, I mean, these discs are flipping for a lot.
So, are you allowed to do that?
I think so.
Shouldn't have been.
I would agree you shouldn't have been, but, okay, yeah, I don't see them anymore. So
it looks like most of them on eBay are selling from anywhere from $150 to $200.
I hope you didn't buy everyone $160 then.
But if you were able to, this guy got one with the MVP Open stamp on it, which is really cool, by the way.
If you're at MVP Open.
And he got Simon to sign it, which also wouldn't have been that hard. You just wait for the autographs.
Yeah.
$355
is what that
sold for.
Then DZ sense. Discs, which this isn't nearly
MVP Open stamp. They only made 250 of them.
Yeah. Those are also allegedly from the production run, not from the proto run.
They sold
run.
For $290, $280.
There's also a Leicester Mass stamp out there somewhere.
That's what that's on the MVP Open one. That's the Leicester.
Oh, there's two MVP Open stamps.
Oh, this Bear Leicester Mass one is the one that's selling for like.
Because there's also
$300.
One that just has the SL logo, the Simon Line.
We
logo.
Haven't seen a disc like have heat like this in a while.
Well, anyway, so then DZ discs. Now this one they didn't do anything that criminal. They just opened it for bidding is how they sold them instead of just dropping them. So they started the bid at $10. And this auction ended at $360.
Wow.
So retailer sold it $360 there. And then D-Town, there was a lot of other companies selling them. D-Town dropped them in store for $60 apiece.
Guys.
So I don't know. What are y'all's opinions on retailers? So MSRP for this and MAP, which is minimum advertised price, and then manufactured suggested retail price, was suggested as a keyword there, was $40.
Yeah.
What do y'all think of retailers selling
them? Is the manufacturer allowed to tell people exactly that you can't sell them for more than this?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, legally, I'm sure they could, but they didn't.
I think the retailers, it's one of those like, how do you want to be perceived? And ultimately, probably a lot of them, it's not that big of a deal to them and like whatever. I'm not going to make a huge fuss about it. I think it's weird, but I think that it should have been MVP telling people, no, you need to sell them for this.
Yeah,
I think it's on the manufacturer to prevent price gouging on their products. Like if you want to take care of your fans and your consumers, you should try and prevent price gouging.
I agree with you on that.
But also you gave them only 10 discs. So then again, it kind of goes back to you again.
I don't necessarily have a problem with a retailer who, it seems weird to me. Yeah. That they would, but
it's
also
tough,
like
you're a small business,
you
like
know
you
it's gonna, like, yeah, it's kind of yeah. tough because like you know you got 10, if you can sell them all for $150 to $300, like,
the problem to me is you aren't buying these at stock price, you're buying them at wholesale price.
Yeah,
on average, true. As a disc golf retailer, you're making like $7-$8 a disc, average somewhere in there, maybe 10 on good discs. you're making like 20-ish bucks, somewhere in the $20 range, a disc on these. So it's not like selling them at MSRP is killing you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like you're still only making a normal amount. And yeah, everyone only got 10. But guess what? In a few weeks, we're going to have unlimited amounts of the stock run that's also going to sell for like hotcakes. What, in my opinion, this screams from retail side, you don't give two craps about your customer base.
Yeah, it feels very unprofessional. It does feel really unprofessional.
Because to me, if you're going to do it like that, in my opinion, just it's kind of a scummy move anyway. So just go full scum mode and create a fake profile and just flip it on eBay. Because then at least people don't know it's you.
But, yeah, yeah.
Because like to me,
or just technically buy it if you're the retail owner, just buy it from yourself and then
Like it would be like when the PlayStation 5 first came out and there was no stock. It would be like when Walmart got their shipment of 10 of them if they started listing them for $1,000 because they would have sold. They would have still sold, mm-hmm. but they didn't. They listed for retail price because. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my thing.
There probably was regulations on it.
Sure, MVP probably could have and should have put regulations on the max you could advertise it for. But, like, I don't have problems with flippers. Like, I don't have a problem with someone paying $40 for this disc.
No.
Then trying to flip it on eBay. Because, like, you paid. You're just a consumer.
Yeah.
You bought it at $40. And then the market's telling you, is it worth more than you paid?
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Because you're taking the risk of when do you choose to sell it? When do you choose whatever? Retailers, like, you knew the 10 was going to sell. So, like, you knew you could sell it for whatever. I mean, people could have listed it for $200 and you would have made $2,000.
I think all the like, retail store owners are going to be talking about, it's like when everybody got stimulus checks and they'd be like, what'd you get with your stimmy? They're going to be like, what'd you get with your time-lapse money, man? Like, I bought a new watch.
Time-lapse
money.
My jaw was on the floor when I was scrolling and seeing posts from retailers and posts about retailers for what people were selling these things for. Cause I'm like,
insane.
What are you thinking? Yeah. Like, it just sends a message that I don't think people would want you to send. Like, I don't think that's true of any of these companies, but it's just like, at the end of the day, it just screams like we care more about money than our customers. To me.
If you are a retail store owner, which I know a lot of retail store owners do listen to this podcast, I've walked into a lot of disc golf shops that are playing grip locked. So it might be an awkward situation for some people if they're listening to this in their store while they're selling them for that. But if you did do that, I think that you should justify yourself in the comments. Well, let us know. Yeah.
The justification is like, we need to make rent.
Justification, they only sent us 10.
Let's just hear it. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. There is a, you know, this does also, like I said, go back to the fact that they were only given 10 of them. Like,
well, yeah, I'm not addressing that as we addressed that last week.
Yeah.
I already called MVP out last week. That was an awful decision.
The whole thing has been super weird and not ideal.
The rent argument, again, a few weeks from now, these will still be a very hot item and you can order 500 of them.
Yeah.
And then you can sell them at $20 bucks a piece.
It's definitely a tough place to be.
There you go. I mean, that in a few weeks, we're going to have the stock run. But like, the crazy demand is why, like, personally, we chose not to drop them. We're just going to put them into mystery boxes. So then people, if you buy a mystery box, you're guaranteed value. This is how I thought through it. And I'm sure there's some people that think this is wrong thinking, but how I think through it is every mystery box we put out for Black Friday is going to have a custom stamp disc or a rare disc of some kind. So then everyone buys it and you're not going to be disappointed because there's a rare disc in it and there's a chance it's time lapse. But we're not going to use the time lapse as the main marketing point to buy it because there's only like 10 of them.
Yeah.
And our Charleston store, I believe, did, because they only got a few, I believe they did like a, you could buy like a raffle ticket for like $1. So that it went to random because instead of having people come in. So that was similar to the DZ disc. Well, it's not similar because one person isn't paying $360. But like a raffle ticket in person, I feel like that's not a bad idea. And they even had, they had one donated back to them. The guy bought a raffle ticket, won it, and then was like, hey, for some reason they didn't want it. So now.
Yeah, low key, the raffle's not the worst idea because then your customers only have to put in $1.
Yeah.
And then.
Because everyone wants
you
one.
You can still get a ton of money out of it, arguably more. And
it's a better look because your customers only paid $1.
Wait a second, man.
But raffles. Then the anyway, that's a great idea. In some states it's illegal. But then
because I guess it's kind of gambling.
Kind of.
50-50s.
But the what you call it? Then they donated it. One of the guys donated it back to the Charleston store, and then Charleston, I guess, didn't know what to do with it. I didn't make any of these decisions. Avery and Dylan, who runs it, did.
Me.
But I like what they did because then they auctioned it off yeah. with all money going to charity.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So come got, on, it boys. Got donated back, and they're like, yeah. well, now we have it back, so we're just going to auction it, and 100% of whatever this goes for is going to charity. So
I think that's awesome.
I think people got creative with what they could do, and that's fine. Because like I said, the bidding one, I didn't really have a problem with. I just thought it was crazy. It went for $360. Because bidding, you're taking a risk as a retailer. As like it could have, well, if not enough traffic went to your site,
minimum bid
at $10 is what they set it for.
That was the minimum bid. Okay, fair enough. Fair
so
enough.
Like if no one went to DZ Discs, they could have sold it for $10. That's the risk they were taking. Mm-hmm. Now it went for $360.
You guys ever when you were younger, like get on eBay and see stuff and be like, yeah. be like, well, what if like nobody saw it except for me? Yeah. What if I put this bid on here and then nobody saw it and I got a PlayStation 6 for $10?
For me, it was like
unreleased PlayStation 6.
I see this Gibson ES-335 and it's on there for $100.
Yeah,
like I'm gonna bid on it.
Like, what are the odds that like all these people see? All
right, I'm willing to pay $400. I'm gonna put $400. It sells for $4,000.
I would always like intentionally misspell whatever I was looking for, hoping that someone else did. I'm like, well, but nice if they play. Misspelled it, I might be the only person That's that finds hilarious. It with a misspelling.
Nice play.
It never worked.
eBay expert.
I bid on so many lots of things. Yeah, do you ever go on eBay and just type in like whatever you're looking for, lot?
Yeah.
If you just add the word lot, you find a bunch
lots,
of them.
Disc lots. Awesome.
Nerf lots, airsoft lots.
I bought a CE lot, and that's how I got my CE Firebird.
Oh, dang. Big that's lots. Sick.
Yeah.
Big lots. Yeah.
Now, speaking of, this is a perfect transition because.
Speaking of scummy business.
No, people.
No. Trevor, no.
No. No. People taking money for things that they probably shouldn't. The PDGA is now doing brand deals.
I was like, better.
This is an interesting one. So this isn't the first time this has happened. The PDGA posted on Instagram a while ago with the European Open, mm-hmm. the like tech disc rival, and they did a sponsored post. Instagram's audience is a lot more forgiving.
Mr. Nice Guy.
I guess you can say.
Brody Smith isn't patrolling those streets.
All the comments on... Well, no, this is what's fascinating. I'll get to that in a second. All the comments on the Instagram post were all just like, horse. Oh, interesting. I'll try that out at some point. All this. The Twitter brand posts, they do it for this touch disc golf storage.
Yeah. Okay. And, I mean, this is ridiculous to think
about.
It says,
discover how you can revolutionize how you organize and display your passion with touch disc golf at the link below. Hashtag disc golf, hashtag ad.
And they wrote like an SEO article.
And then they wrote like an article, basically. It's a paid post. They put hashtag ad.
That's just so crazy to me.
So the PDGA is doing brand deals. And so then... Everyone on Twitter. This is what was fascinating.
Dude, Andrew Fish got fired.
Andrew
up, bro.
Fish effed him out like four different times, up dang. And down him.
He literally said like, no, like I actually need a written response to this. Like it's unacceptable. Like they better write a response to me. Like,
yeah, because that's him. It takes really realistically only the PDGA could unite Brody haters and Brody fans.
That's true.
In hatred towards one thing.
That's true.
And only the PDGA has that type of power, and that's what happened here. Is basically shout out PDGA. This is their most engagement they've ever gotten on a tweet.
Shout out. This is actually a paid ad by
that's
the
PDGA. That's probably what they thought. They just saw like nobody was going to see this tweet because nobody pays attention to our Twitter.
Yeah.
We paid attention.
That is so crazy to
and
me
so
that they would do that.
People were just lighting them up. And some people, though, were bringing up questions of like, they were defending it a little bit. My thing is, I was going to call it out, but the only reason I didn't was because the day before, I tweeted about an ad in the PDGA magazine that I thought Latitude 64 did a good job on.
Uh-huh.
And then I was about to quote tweet this, and I was like, is that going to make me kind of hypocritical if I just basically told the PDGA, like, I love this ad in this disc golfer magazine, and the next tweet is, why the frick are you running ads? Mm. Because I think that's where, for the PDGA, it's probably a blurry line because, like, they've been doing this disc golfer magazine since the dawn of the PDGA, it feels like.
I think it's true. I think a lot of it,
the magazine is just a paper version of social media.
I think a lot of the argument is more of an appearances thing.
Yes, it's like, that's my argument.
Yeah, because like the magazine, it's when it's your social media and like the entire post. It wasn't even subtle. It was just like, here's an ad, hashtag ad. Like, it'd be one thing if it was like, if the PDGA was partnering with other organizations like doing it a little more side by side, it almost looked like they hacked the PDGA account and posted
it. No, because so here's the problem is like the PDGA is not content creators, mm-hmm. right? Like if this came from, if this came from PDGA Rodman, I wouldn't find that weird, right? Because like they're a content creator. The PDGA though exists to.
Does PDGA Rodman still make stuff?
I don't know. I haven't
I
heard
don't
from
think
him
I've
in a while.
Heard from him in a long time.
Maybe he blocked us. Wouldn't that be interesting? Be blocked by PDGA Rodman. But the PDGA their social accounts should be solely about promoting disc golf and stuff like that. And this could have went a lot better, and I don't think anyone would have batted their eye, if Touch Disc Golf became the official storage partner of the PDGA.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like a co-branded thing, and like, this is the initiative, and we're going to be, you know, Touch Disc Golf is providing us with these so that we can put them up in schools. So at PE class, inside the storage closet, they're going to have blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's a seamless integration that does good for the sport, does good for the growth of the sport, and fits the PDGA brand identity while still promoting this product. Mm-hmm. The problem was, this was just basically Touch Disc Golf wrote a post, sent it to the PDGA, slipped them probably $250, and the PDGA is like, send it. Yep.
Yeah, we kind of, we honestly reacted to this wrong because we should have tried to get NAD. We still could.
We still could.
But I don't know.
It'd be the ultimate. It would be how the much, ultimate like, funny play.
It would be great.
It'd be hilarious.
Dude, it'd be really maybe we'll reach funny. Out and see if we can get a because they don't listen to this.
Robin hasn't posted since July.
That's tough.
I think he's gonzo.
Maybe we should try to get a sponsored post for Grip Locked.
That would be hilarious.
Listen to the number one podcast.
Listen to this episode of us talking bad about it.
That'd be freaking funny.
We definitely
might have to try that.
Name your price, PDGA.
Check the pricing, yeah.
That's really what I want to know, is how much it cost.
Yeah.
I think I'd be, I'm not sure if I'd be more mad if it was expensive or cheap.
Well, I think that was the other, that's the other side of this is like, our PDGA.
I'm
going to
be mad either way, but I'm not
people,
sure what
like,
we'll make
our PDGA memberships have gotten us less and less over the years.
Yeah.
And they like, cost more and more, man.
And the cost hasn't exactly, I don't know if the cost has changed up or down. But it hasn't gone down.
Oh, it is gone up.
Has it gone up?
I don't know.
I don't think it has. I've been paying $75 for years.
I don't even pay for it anymore.
Yeah.
I just hack it. I'm just kidding.
I've been paying $75 for years. I don't think the PGA membership's gone up, but like DGN subscription price has gone up. I
is still it get $75
I'm
now?
A pro member.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
It was
50, throw 50, up.
For 50 for AM.
Yeah. It was 45 whenever I...
Okay, so it has gone up then.
I think it was 40 or 45 whenever I first joined.
So it might have gone up a little
bit.
Wonder
if I can find a receipt.
I know it was in the 40s.
But was it like 49 though by chance?
No, I'm pretty sure it was $40, but it might have been 45.
Okay, so maybe it has gone up a little bit then. But you got UDisc Pro for free. You don't get that anymore. You got the 50%
I remember because I asked my dad.
50% DGN discount has gone. You still get that, but DGN's gone up, so that cost has gone up. So like, and now you... if you're not a PDGA member, you just can't play in C tiers anymore. So you have to be a PDGA member.
Dang.
So like the PDGA has taken away benefits instead of adding benefits, and now they're monetizing in a new way. And like that, like it would be one thing if the PDGA was like, "Hey, everyone's discounted is like everyone's getting $5 discount, and we're support, we're able to do this because of new monetization efforts." And like you told us, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Trying to load an email from 2015. I've got my renewal.
It just feels weird. I don't know. It was more so just it doesn't pass the eye test. Like if you dig down to it, probably nothing really wrong with it per se. It just like is the look of it is wrong.
That's what
and
I was
like,
going to ask.
The integrity behind it's it because someone else also brought up a good point. They're like, you know, what it feels like is like, oh, if you pay, you can get the PDGA to do what you want.
Yes.
So it's like, so what else can I pay to make the PDGA do? Mm-hmm. And that's what
point.
It feels like.
That's a good
That's
point.
Where the line kind of gets blurry and feels wrong.
That's what I was going to say was I was going to ask you guys what the actual like issue was with it because it doesn't feel right. And I think, and I was going to say basically the same thing is it feels like PDGA can be bought.
Now, to be fair,
they can.
I feel the same way about the Disc Golf Pro Tour doing straight up brand deals.
Okay.
Because like again, I don't mind creative integration where it explains what's happening. Because like on the ground advertising, that makes sense. You know what I mean? But like when it's a social post, you're basically just selling the audience itself. Like you're not providing value in that moment.
Like
if I'm providing value by putting on this event and the tickets for the event are directly cheaper because of advertising added or whatever, like I'm providing value by putting on this event. You're coming to the event, you're seeing it. This, there's no value provided to me unless I spend money.
Well, because if you think about it, whenever you do an ad read or a brand deal, you are selling your audience to this thing. So whenever you see that just scrolling through Instagram or anything like that, like, oh, this is how much I'm worth to them. Like it gives you kind of that kind of feeling of like, I'm not valued by them because they just
and
are
again,
just throwing this right in my face. They're taking advantage of the fact that
I think
them.
You don't feel it with the Pro Tour is you do feel value by the Pro Tour every other day. The Pro Tour provides so much value. Yeah. And then there's just a, they have a really good give to ask ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So the last, whereas the PDGA is already being criticized for like players not being valued by them, yeah. So then it just like adds to that narrative. Like you that already have sense. A bad narrative going against you, then you need to do stuff to change the narrative. And I feel like this added to it, which is what created this backlash. When the actual action of the brand deal is not that criminal, it's just mm-hmm. the feel of it makes you farther distrust of an organization that's already been losing trust.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
A junior membership, back when I got involved, this is a junior membership, so you'd be, I guess, below 18.
I'll check mine.
It's only $30.
Well, let's see what the, let's just see PDJ junior membership costs.
Yeah, so see if that one's gone up.
$30.
What, still $30. So that's impressive. I'm trying to see if I have any of my receipts from like when I got my first non-junior. I mean, surely, I mean, every email they send you is renew, renew, renew. Oh, here we go. Okay, this is $50 for my AM membership.
Yeah.
This is in 2018.
So 5 years later, it's still $50.
That's pretty good.
So their cost to you hasn't gone up.
When did you join?
I don't remember.
Is it earlier than 2018?
No, probably not early. Not earlier than 2018.
So then the cost hasn't gone up. All right, moving on. Another social post. This one comes from Dynamic Discs. Basically, the rest of this podcast is going to be social posts because there's just a bunch of fascinating ones. This one came from Dynamic Disc literally Tuesday of last week, I think. And the big storyline from it is Carter Aarons has left Dynamic Discs when they responded to a comment, and it seems as though basically...
It was $50.
It was $50?
Yep.
It seems as though what happened was he essentially got an offer from another company. It seems like he's already inked the deal with another company, and Dynamic Disc basically agreed to let him go. That's what it seemed like in the comments. The main reason, I mean, obviously Carter Aarons leaving is a semi big storyline. He's made some noise on the pro scene. It's more so he has a big ceiling, a lot of people feel. I would be one of those people. I feel like he does have a good upside, but it's not like a Gannon Burr type movement yet where he hasn't made noise when it comes to winning or even like top three, top five.
Nah.
He might have come top five. I don't think so, though. But what made this post make noise was the way they worded it. It sounded like that he had died. Is the way... So just the first few lines. You clarified it, but it starts with, "Today we bid farewell to Carter Aarons, a player we saw grow from junior to pro." That's line
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they entered in between it. So you just read that, and it's just a picture of him. So... A lot of people were like, "Why? What the heck? Why did you start it that way? I literally thought this guy died." And the next line was,
"I did too.
We're grateful for all he contributed to our team and wish him the best of luck as he continues his professional career. Thanks for the memories, Carter."
Saved oh, man.
Roller coaster. Engagement, yeah. though.
Yeah, it did get a lot of engagement. Do you want a lot of engagement on a post announcing a player's leaving your team?
Valid point.
Yeah.
Point, man.
I don't know. Anyways, it'll be interesting to see where Carter lands and when that announcement comes. Because like I said, it seems like it's already a done deal. It doesn't seem like he is entering free agency. It seems like a company has already
locked him in. Let's just throw out names. Dysmania.
I can feel that.
Tech Disc.
I'm thinking Discraft.
I think that
he seems like a Discraft
teams,
guy.
They just have so many players. I think that, and he wouldn't be on their elite team. But I could see it.
Lone Star.
I think that teams should start
clean. Lone Star.
They should announce players leaving, like when a team in sports gets like beat really bad, and like their Twitter will just put like final score, blah blah blah, and like there's nothing else, no picture, no nothing. They make it very subtle. That's how they should do it. Should be like Carter Aarons left the team. Then that's it. That's the only thing in the post.
It's kind of like whenever
or just
like,
put it on their story.
So and so left the chat.
Yeah, just make it very subtle.
That would be funny. It's like the team dynamic group chat and just screenshot the part where it just says Carter Aarons left the chat.
I'm still in the team dynamic group chat. It's awesome.
Wow.
Shh.
The final post to read to wrap up this show.
Is meeting Olive Garden?
I chickened out of the Olive Garden dinner.
You were supposed to be there.
I was there. I just wasn't a member.
Yeah,
we
no,
were
saying
there.
You were supposed to be there. You were supposed to
I
be
showed
there.
Up. I showed up.
You didn't
up.
Show up.
I'm the father that stepped up.
We have finally heard something from Katrina Allen. You know, we've been wondering what's going on.
You
this doesn't exactly answer, but she has at least addressed it. There is something going on. We
How
no
did you hear
this.
About it?
I had to go to Foundation's account to find
okay.
her. She All didn't right. block Foundation.
Oh, that's a good one.
Someone, what happened Blocked. Is someone posted in the Discord and said, oh, Katrina finally made a post about what's going on this season. Because she lost by 30 again this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, what, five weekends in a row? Basically, as soon as I said it was shocking, she just decided to make that her new standard and just like rolled with it the rest of the year.
Oh my God. Well, she wouldn't have seen you say that, but yeah.
Correct, yeah. but someone posted in the Discord, in our debate night Discord, and it was like linked to the post. And then I clicked on the post and it just like came up and I was remembered I was blocked. So I had to switch my Instagram account to go walk, see this post.
You hear
post.
That, Katrina? You better block the other account.
You gotta block. I've got, if you just do that, I'll create another account and another account and another account.
He's going to find
That's the difference between you and I. I'll just keep making another paper company.
Hunter Thomas Instagram company.
Yeah. This is the post said. There's been a combo of things after the preserve that have happened that have hit me pretty hard. I won't go into detail because that's not the point of this
post. Are
you
going to read this whole post?
Yes.
Okay.
I wish she would go into detail.
Well, I figured, like, what am I going
to do? I just got to get comfortable.
She doesn't say anything in this post.
I got to get comfortable. It's a long post.
So the only way I can do anything with this post is to read it.
I just don't like it when people say, I'm not going to go into detail. I love details.
Well, what I'm about to read is a whole bunch of nothing.
Okay.
As far as information that's actually applicable to what's going on the course.
Yeah.
So
it's like season two of Only Murders in the Building.
I haven't watched it yet, but maybe.
It's just a joke. It's fine.
There's been a combo of things after the preserve that have happened that have hit me pretty hard. I won't go into detail because that's not the point of this post. The last thing I need is a pity party. These things have been devastating and I've handled them poorly. I've become angry, frustrated, and bitter, and even resentful. These are characteristics I usually despise in others and feelings I try to be conscious of and not act on. As I reflect...
Also, is that a little interesting that she said like about like resentfulness and bitterness and then said it's usually something she despises in other? Isn't that being bitter? If you despise something in another... Anyways.
That's being dispository.
These are characteristics I usually despise in others and in feelings I try to be conscious of and not act on. As I've reflected on the last few months, I've learned that I've allowed these things to turn me into someone I don't recognize and don't want to be. Although for the last month I've been doing things like working out, ice baths, running, practicing harder, etc., I have realized, thanks to some perspective from Austin, that none of it will matter if I don't start being more positive and kinder to myself and others. When I'm feeling down and not successful, I tend to isolate myself, and there's a weird feeling of not feeling worthy of love and happiness. I share all this to say I'm so sorry to my fans, friends, car mates, and sponsors. I've allowed these things to allow me to lose perspective. There are so many things to celebrate and be grateful for, but I have disappointedly chosen to focus on the negative and hate from people that don't really matter. Just like all bad habits, I'm sure things won't change overnight, and I plan to slowly improve each day to come out of this slump and mood, but my main goal is to try to enjoy the moment, be available for fans and friends, and start being more positive and kind to myself and others. Through this time, there's been some pretty amazing people on both and both of my incredible sponsors who have reached out in love and support, and I'm grateful for those people. They have inspired me to wake up and get out of this funk. So thankful for a new day to be better.
Before we say anything about what this post doesn't say, I'll just say that was a really nice post.
Yeah. No,
I felt like it actually said a lot, but it just didn't say anything on the news side of anything. But it said a lot about like just her emotional state and everything. I thought it was a very well-worded
Well, what it feels
post.
Like is what we assumed is somewhat true of like there is something going on with Katrina Allen. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out because someone who has the talent to compete is finishing 30 strokes behind the lead.
Yeah.
So obviously something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
What we always were wondering is like, is it an injury? It seems like it answers it's not a physical injury. It's just like exterior things have her in a dark place mentally where she's not, almost like she's losing confidence on the course because she doesn't believe in herself anymore because she's spent so much time focusing on things that are negative outside of the sport that it's pouring into her on-course performance, which has then led to poor performance, which has then led to self-doubt, which has then led to isolation, which has then led to losing by 30 strokes at the U.S. Women's.
That was very astute.
So, like I said, no real answer detail-wise, but at least a look into what's going on has been provided, which we've been waiting for because, I mean, the preserve was what, back May? June?
June.
So July, August, September. It's been like three and a half months
out there.
Since the preserve. So we've been wondering it for a while. At least now there's a little window into some type of answer.
I feel like we need to like write her a card or something.
We can.
If I send it, she won't get it.
That's a good point.
That post made me so sad, but also happy for her.
Well, it's good, like, it's a weird spot in professional disc golf, I feel like, because, like, the professional athletes are so accessible to fans.
Yeah.
To where, more than other sports, they feel like friends a lot more than fans.
Mm-hmm.
And until recently, there hasn't really been media that's critical in any way, shape, or form. So if you are a pro that has like started years and years ago and is entering, as Paul would say, the modern era, then the transformation of media has happened as well, to where there's way more noise now than there was back in earlier days.
Noisemakers.
We are some of the noisemakers. There's way more than just us. But
TLC.
Prior to that, like the only Smashbox and Terry Miller and them, they're phenomenal. They did incredible work to make disc golf just watchable. But like literally you couldn't have watched it without them.
Hit 'em with it.
But they also did a good job covering it as the podcast. But they were the people, and still are the people, that were covering it both on the course and off the course. And so you got to be friends with the people, is like where the disc golf media didn't have that bite to it, where like no one would call anyone out, because you couldn't really call anyone out, because like you're going to see them next week. And that's still the case. Like 90% of big disc golf podcasts work for Disc Golf Network.
When we go to the USDGC, we're going to get attacked.
Probably. But hey, that's how you should feel, I feel like, as media.
Yeah, I hope so.
No, but it's not just...
We're on the cutting edge.
I want to see all business Brad take someone down.
It's not just us, though. Like, there's plenty of people that speak in much worse ways than us about players.
Mm. Yeah.
The noise has gotten a lot louder because there's way more people watching the sport, which by nature is technically a good thing, because there's more people watching, there's more people passionately caring, which means that there's more people expressing those opinions when you don't perform to their standards. But as a player, if you started your career when it was quiet and now it's later in your career and it's way louder, that feels way more amplified, because that's not when you started. If you're a Gannon Burr and you just burst onto the pro scene when there's all this noise, you've had the noise since the beginning. It's way easier to tune it out. Mm-hmm. Versus if you're someone who started your career and there was no noise, so you could read every comment, you could read all the tweets about you, you could listen to every episode about you. And then all of a sudden, that starts turning into there's negative and positive, and not just positive. Then the negative sounds way louder than the positive, even though they're both there. And that's when it starts really weighing on people. Versus if it's just always been there, then it's easy to drain it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the modern era.
Welcome to the now.
That started. September. You know what? I'll give Paul the answer. I know you're listening to this, Paul. It's September 25th, 2023. This is the start of the modern era. So all stats that we refer to on this show, if we say modern era,
can we name it something else?
The grip locked era.
My gosh.
Welcome to the grip locked era.
We need somebody to start doing stats for us and like
since
use
the grip locked
era as, oh my
like
gosh.
It started, stats has started in what, 20?
That is so narcissistic.
2019, grip locked era stats. The grip
like
locked
ever since
era,
we started caring about it, that's what matters.
The grip locked era stats will just be since we started consuming disc golf in like 2015.
Yeah.
So like if we can remember it, like it's fresh on our minds, it's the grip locked era.
Yeah.
So Will Schustrick is the best player of all time.
If people like question it in the comments, we're like, no, we use grip locked era stats. And like, what does that mean? It's like, well, basically just our brain. Whenever we started caring about stats,
GLE version.
The GLE. Have we used the GLE transition? What's the
translation?
E? What's the E?
V.
Era.
V.
GLV.
Oh.
Wait, no, I meant E. Era.
Era. Yeah, you're right. GLE. That's all I have. That's the podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I actually would like to bring something up.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was ready for it.
Boom!
Next week, there's no event going on this week, really, so who knows what we'll end up talking about next week.
A little taste of off-season grip lock.
Yeah, a little taste of off-season grip lock next week, but then. We head to USDGC.
We're going live. Grip lock. Live!
This just in. It's grip lock time.
We need to do, I want an intro with a band. Because like live shows have bands.
I'll just bring a ukulele.
Like, welcome in, Grip Locked Live with your host.
And it's just Connor.
Perfect.
We'll see you next week.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active.
things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.
Spectrum Business knows small business owners have to do it all. Get Spectrum One for Business. Just $49.99 a month for internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for a year. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Today's top story, the flavor merger of the century between the Peanut Butter Group and Chocolaty Corp. Joining me is a PBC executive.
Thanks for having me, Barry.
Now, how did you know the merger and the byproduct of it, Jif peanut butter and chocolate flavored spread, would be a success?
You know, it was a gut feeling, a rumbling, if you will. Besides, they're two titans of taste.
Very true. Goes great with pretzels.
And pancakes.
Apples too, I bet. Try Jif PBC today.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.